bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hi, welcome to the Photo Show. It's me, all on me, Jack Jones. I'm actually enjoying this. I'm not going to stop, I think. I'm going to carry on. I'm going to be on my own forever. Alex, if you want to come back, your cards. I had an email this week that said that they were enjoying me on my own. I don't know whether I should be pleased at that or not. But anyway, here we go. It's the week's photographic news as read by me. If you've got anything in the chat room, do come out with it. I'll do my best. Try and keep up with both, but I do get lost. First things first then. Mac Jim has done the doc this week. Well done, Jim. Thank you ever so much, mate, for your help. It's invaluable every week, as ever. And one of the things that he's put in here, and I've got to say, I can't read the comments out, but he's not impressed with it. Let's put it that way. This is a concept camera for Leica. It looks like a compact mirror with a powder puff in it, but it's not. It's a camera with a viewfinder that you can see there on the left-hand side of the picture if you're looking. I'm guessing that those are shutter priorities on the top there. So 1 second right the way down through to 2/1000ths of a second. Quite where the lens is, it's on the other side to the powder puff bit. Where the sensor is, I don't know, because that looks awfully flat to the back of the camera. This is definitely a compact. It's got the Leica S features. It's got the Leica badge. And no doubt, if it ever gets made, which I seriously doubt, it's going to have the Leica price tag to go with it. Whether it's going to have any decent pictures, low light coverage, whether it's got any more manual controls that are coming, who knows, because it's an utter rubbish piece of crap. It's Vincent Sahl who's created it, and it's a nice concept. Yes, fair enough. But technology is nowhere near making anything like that at the moment, and I can't see it being there for a while yet. So, bad luck, Vincent. You haven't impressed anyone here. There was no specs, there was no nothing. I think it's just a picture, isn't it? Pretty pictures. Well done, Vincent. Now, talking to pretty pictures, do you remember a little while ago there was a girl called Kelly Angood, and I think we covered this on the photo show. She made a cardboard cutout Hasselblad. Medium format or large format camera. There you go. That's it. That was the camera. And it was all made out of cardboard and it actually worked. Well, guess what? She's run a Kickstarter project, which is still running now. You can put your money into it. All you got to do is throw up $45 and you will get your very own kit to make yourself a Hasselblad. You can make the Hasselblad out of cardboard. The cardboard will be there. You won't just have to do the plans. Now, if you want to have a go at it yourself, then you haven't got a problem because Kelly actually gives away, free of charge on the net, a PDF of all of the cutouts that you need to make this thing up. And it will take a picture at the end. If you stick film in it, you will be able to take a picture. But if you want the kit, Kickstarter have got the project. It's $45. It's already oversubscribed by $15,000. So I think this is definitely coming. And you'll get your kit if you pay the $45 on at the end of November. And it looks great, doesn't it? And it works. That's the key thing. The back comes off. The film goes in. It's got a little viewfinder so you can see through it. And there's some pictures on her website that she's taken with the camera. They're pretty awful grainy crap because it's only a pinhole camera, but there you go. That's what you get. It's a whole pile of bits of cutout and a scalpel and away you go. Takes film, yes. Please explain, says Ian. What's film? Wow. I need to get hold of the PDF, says Teresa. Yeah, you'd have more fun making it, wouldn't you? With that kind of investment, I want laminated cards, says Tony. You cheapskate bastard. Grab the PDF. And it could be an idea for the bash. That is a great idea, Adam. We'll get a whole pile of knackered old bits of cardboard for the kids. We'll get some really sharp scalpels. And we'll get the PDFs and some spray mat. And we'll stick them on and cut them out. And there'll be blood everywhere. And maybe not. We'll get an adult with a pair of scissors. Getting the adult might be the hard part. Yeah. Never mind. Now then. When old what's-his-face, Benedict, was sworn in as Pope, there was an absolute throng of people filled out in St. Peter's. And that's what it looked like. There you go. That's everybody in St. Peter's Square that was looking up, waiting for Benedict to be announced when it was on. Brilliant. Have we sold a lot of mobile phones since then? Might have done. Because this is the picture last week, or this week. Look at that. That is the picture that is greeting Pope Francis the First, and it is a sea of cell phones and iPads and Android pads and Galaxy S3s as far as the eye can see. Thousands and thousands. If you haven't got the video podcast and you're listening to this on audio, you've got to go and have a look at this. But that is the difference between 8 years. Oh, click the wrong one. There we go. 8 years from 2005 to 2013. And the compact camera market is dead. There's the truth. Henrik Janowski, have you ever heard of him? He's a wildlife photographer. And he's had an absolutely fantastic idea. One day, he was sitting, wondering what he could do to get better pictures of the swans down at the local swamp. And he thought he'd build a swan. This is his hide swan. He's probably sat in there with about 20 grand's worth of camera kit floating on the water. He actually has to be inside it, so he's three parts submerged to start with. And that's his goose come swan on the top of it. And that's the goose, and there's the swan. And it floats around, and he reckons he gets great pictures with it. There's no pictures to show you whether it is any good, but it is utter genius, as Adam says in the chat room. Well done. Absolutely. I like that. Well done, Henry. I'm in the middle of making me old camera thing, and I had a cracking idea for indoor, because I can't use it indoor because it's got huge blades on it and it'll smash everything to bits, but I've thought of the way of dealing with that. So I'll have a go at making that soon. The other one's flying. I've got really big batteries for it now. I'm making another one this week, and I'm going to go for the indoor one the week after when I get back from holiday. It's going to be cool. I'll show you on the photo show. The goose's eyes are the flash. It's butterball. That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? Here we go with another concept camera. Oh, that's just what we need. This is a concept for a modular camera. It's come from a firm called Equinox. Don't hold your breath for this one to come out, and there's no Kickstarter project or anything like that. But the idea of this, and I'm sure we've covered this before on the photo show, is to come out with a modular set of sensors. So you stick your lenses on these just the same as you would before. So there it is with the Canon lens on. It's the same kind of principle. And then what you do is you pick the body that you want to go with the sensor. So there's loads of different bodies that will come along, and the sensor just clips into them, and then you fix your bayonet on the front with your lens, and away you go. It's got a flash that you can take a standard flash. There it is with a Nikon speedlight on the top. And it also has an optional viewfinder that's kind of a bit of a point and hope, I would have guessed. But unless it's an electronic one, it doesn't show whether that's a through image or whether it's just linked electronically to the sensor body. It's a nice idea. The guy that's come up with it is a company called Equinox. There's at least three different body shells that you can get into, and there's a small bare bones grip that you can get with then all the stuff on it, and it's just a way of mixing and matching it all together. It is a good idea. Will it be bloody expensive, says Adam? Probably. Is it a Chinese knockoff, says Ian? Probably. But it's a lot of concepts out there. Yes, absolutely, Teresa, most definitely. I can't see that. If that came out, I'd probably buy one. It does look very, very good. But whether it'll actually come out or not is a different question entirely. Right, then into the thick of the proper reviews. No concepts now. This is the McCoy. Sorry about the grainy picture, but it's the only one I could get. This is the Fujifilm X100S. Now, if you remember, we talked about the X100 on the show. There's a better picture. And that's the current one. The 100S has now taken over it. Based on the fact it's got an S after it, it's the sport version. It's got an optical viewfinder through the side of it, which is bloody amazing. I haven't seen one of those since the 70s. Loads of manual controls on it, and it's a high-end compact camera, just like the X100 was. 16.3 megapixels, great. APS-C sensor. This sensor is 10 times the normal size of a compact camera. So So you've got a lot of options for gathering light there. Huge, huge sensors and pixels within it. It's a 23mm fixed lens. It doesn't come off. There's no interchange with it. But you can buy a little attachment as an add-on that goes on the front of it, and that'll take you up to 49mm. 9 blades in the aperture, and it goes from 100 ISO to 25-600 ISO. So that's that APS-C sensor working for you, gathering all that light. Very, very good. It sounds fantastic. The fact you've got to buy the add-on extra to get up to 50mm, okay, I suppose that's not too bad. You've got to buy an eyepiece to go on the top if you want an electronic viewfinder, which again is probably going to be quite pricey, because the overall price of this camera, cheapest that you can get it at the moment, is at wexphotographic.com, and that's £1,099 for a compact camera. We're right up there with the Nikon that we looked at last week, $1,299 if you're buying it US. It looks nice. But I'm awfully sorry, I think it's probably vastly overpriced for what it can do. It's like that bloody Nikon, says Adam. Absolutely, forget it. Wow, again, the high price point and shoot. It's a little bit more than a point and shoot, perhaps. It's got a bit more to it. And the sensor is going to be really, really nice. I'm sure the quality of the image is going to be excellent. If you're into your compacts and you're into buying things like Leicas and so on, It could be a cheap version of the Leica for you, maybe. I don't know. One of the things that was interesting in the specs to me, it only comes with... it's got a shutter limitation on it, which all cameras have, but the shutter limitation is 1/30th of a second at the low end, so it won't go any lower than 1/30th. So forget about putting this on a tripod and doing bulb exposures or doing huge 30-second exposures. That ain't going to happen. If it's not a 30th of a second, you're knackered. But what could be a real... problem, and a bigger problem, is the fact that the upper shutter limit is 1/1000th of a second. Now 1/1000th of a second on a sunny day won't get you anywhere. You go back to 100 ISO on a bright sunny day out in a field and you'll easily get past 1/1000th of a second, and it's going to top out at that point. So you could get a lot of blown out images. I'm sure it's going to shoot in RAW and you'll probably be able to recover a couple of stops, but that seems ludicrous. The only thing that makes me think is that that could be a misprint, but the story didn't say that it was. They looked at it was right, and they've sent a query off to verify it with Fuji, but they didn't get a reply at the time that I read the review. But 1/10000th of a second, great, fantastic, huge selling point. 1/1000th, that could render the camera absolutely bloody useless. I don't see that. Don't see that at all. Something wrong there. It's not right. Overall conclusions, it takes lovely pictures according to the review, and lovely is lovely, but for a grand, that'll get you a very good quality SLR with a decent lens, and you'll take pictures that probably aren't a million miles away from that, and you've got the interchange, and you could probably get a flash on top of it. It's certainly got a viewfinder with it. You've got to be really into your compact photography for this, and I'm amazed that these things are selling, because I certainly wouldn't buy one. Even though I want nice pictures, I wouldn't be buying this. Lomography have come up with a fantastic little device. Now, this was a Kickstarter project from a little while ago. Basically, it's a film scanner that you can use your smartphone with. So there's a block that holds your smartphone at a distance with a little dark room, as it were, and then there's a clamp that will hold your iPhone in place at the top. You open up the camera application, just like you would anyway on your camera, and then you feed your film through on a little sprocket run, and when you get it all lined up and it's hunky-dory, you hit the shutter button on your phone, bang, Bob's your uncle, and you've scanned your film. If you've got slides... it doesn't say that it does slides, and whether you'd be able to do them with them still in the frames or out of the frames, I don't know. But if you've got 35mm roll film, then 35mm roll film will just go in the internal sprockets on it, and you can wind it forwards. Price of this? Not bad. It's $59, so that's going to come in around 40 quid here in the UK if it does a decent exchange rate. If you've got a pile of stuff that's kicking around, you know, a member of the family's died and you've found some old roll film or something like that, this is going to be great. You'll get them all scanned. They'll all be a reasonably good resolution. You've got 8 megapixels on your iPhone. You've got 13 megapixels if you're talking about your new Galaxy S4. So I think it's great. go out there and get it. Might be a fun thing to have. Kickstarter campaign has been cancelled due to a legal threat against Angood. Update to above URL. Oh, bad luck. Windrider in the chat room has just put a link in that's come up on PitterPixel just now over the cardboard Hasselblad sold as a DIY kit. The Kickstarter campaign has been cancelled. I guess the legal threat is coming from Hasselblad. If that is, Hasselblad, you've done yourself no favours there. You've just gone down massively in my estimation. I never wanted one of your cameras anyway. They all suck. No, they don't. I'd have one. Google's getting rid of Snapseed. As part of its spring clean, it's getting rid of Snapseed on the desktop. You'll still be able to get Snapseed if you're talking about on your iOS device or Android device. I'm sure they make it for Android. But Snapseed is going on the Mac desktop and the Windows desktop only. So whether you can buy it now and then you'll get to keep it or not, I don't know. It would be worth having a look into. But it's only the desktop it's going. You'll still be able to get it on your mobile devices. But if you're a big Snapseed user on desktop, you're not anymore. Now then, what happens to your EXIF data and your IPCC data? If you take a picture and you upload it onto a mobile service on the net, then what you're doing is effectively trusting that the person on the other end of it that's looking after it for you and displaying it is going to keep your copyright information there and isn't going to strip it all away. Well, ITPC have done a survey. They've gone out there and they've looked at all the IPTC data that's out on images across all of the photo repositories that are out there, and they've compiled a little list of who are the goodies and who are the baddies. And there's the list. Effectively, grey means there's nothing to have on it. Green is that they've respected your data and it's kept and it's displayed and it's embedded within the image. And red means they've stripped it out. Grey just means it shows nothing. Red means they've taken it out. Facebook, if you have a look, it will leave your IPTC data on for displayed images, but if it's an embedded image, it strips it out entirely. And the download of the embedded image has got it all gone as well. Facebook does the same thing. Flickr's pretty draconian all round. Google's the only one that really emerges from this with any real credibility, because it actually keeps all of your copyright data that's in the metadata of your image. And Dropbox comes out as well, pretty well throughout of it. But if you want to store your images, it would seem that Google and Picasa and Google Plus are the best places to go and put it. They may or may not. We'll have to wait and see. But that's a good survey. Look after your data. Oh, SilverStack. This is SilverStack. SilverStack is from a company called Pomfort. And Pomfort, from what I can tell, I've never used this software, so I don't know whether it's any good or not. It looks like a library, and you'd be thinking it's a photo library, but no, it actually stores other documents as well, and it's a media storage facility, including metadata controls and so on. It functions really well with Canon DSLRs, Nikon DSLRs. It does the Red camera as well and the Arri Alexa, and it also works with the metadata off GoPro models as well, and it'll store the audio and the video and the stills from all of the images, from all of the cameras that we're talking about there. The press release says, Pomfort, a global provider of professional solutions for data and colour management on the film set, has announced an upcoming upgrade to its flagship software, SilverStack. This is version 3, and it supports arbitrary file types, including RAW, sequences, photos, sound files, media files, and other production documentation as well. And it's to do with manipulation and quality checks for it. It's $600, which it's an awful lot of money. It's not iMovie, but if you've got a version of it already, it's only $129 to upgrade. But I won't be parting with my money for that one, I have to say. Not good. Did you know that YouTube will do, slideshows? YouTube will do slideshows. If you upload all of your photos, use it for the photos, click it on the upload side and stick all your photos in for the slideshow, You can either use photos that you've already uploaded to Google Plus or Picasa, or photos that are on your computer and upload those as part of the normal process. Drag and drop it into the form that they give you. It's on the right-hand side there of the images you see where it says create videos, create photo, slideshow, and they'll make a slideshow. And you can put music to it and all that kind of stuff. How good's that? I never knew it did it. Well done. Now, did you have PhotoPic? Do you remember a few weeks ago we said that there was a repository called PhotoPic? And if you, and if you put your images in there, you had to get them out as soon as you could because PhotoPic was being closed down at the end of February. There's been a confirmation. They closed it down on the 28th of February and that's it. If you've lost your images, you were warned, but PhotoPic are saying that they will help photographers get back their images. But there will be a charge for the administration to recover them. So if you've got stuff on PhotoPic and you need it back, it's not the end of the world, but you're going to have to go and get it off pretty soon. And they will make a charge. On their website, they don't say how much it is, though. That's the only thing. It could be a bit pricey. You can't see them being very nice about it, can you? If they don't have to be. HDR Projects have come out with Platin. This is from Franz Verlag, and they've got a bloody advert over me page, bastards. Yeah, HDR Projects has released a new piece of software called Platin. It's HDR, high dynamic range stuff for your camera. Franz Verlag is the publishing house that's done it. And it's a piece of software that tries to give you exceptionally natural-looking HDR photos. Realistic rendering of high-contrast scenes, adjustable smoothing and removal of unwanted halos and more. HDR Projects Platin is a standalone software optimized for Mac 64-bit and Windows 32-bit and 64-bit operating systems. £100 if you want to have a go with it. I'm going to see if I can get a code for review and I'll give it a go. But if you're into HDR, it could be quite nice. The sample images that were on there, I've got to say, I'm not a lover of HDR at all, but they didn't look too bad. They weren't too overt, which is a good thing. If you just want to enhance the depth that you've got in your existing images, then HDR's good. Cool. There we go. That was a ram through the photo news. With a bit of editing and a swear word. Oops. Onto your questions. If you've got a question for us, then all you've got to do is send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We'll read it out. We'll answer it. I will. I'll try. First question is from Mark F. in Shrewsbury. Hi, Ewan. Love the shows and loving the solo shows as well. Thanks, mate. Last week you mentioned 6.45 format. What's the difference between medium format, large format, and 6.45 format? Right. I was never a great one with film. I shot 35mm pretty much everywhere I went. I never owned any format, medium format cameras or large format cameras. Alex is the one for this a little bit more than me. But effectively, large format was anything where you'd end up with single film plates or stuff on a reel where you were at sort of 4 or 5 inches or greater. I think 4x5 was the break-off point. That became large format, and anything bigger than that, I mean, you can get up to 8x10, you could get up to 24 inches by 26-inch film, and it was a plate, and you'd buy it and mount it on a plate, and you'd expose it with a sliding door and then put it back, or you'd take a cap off on it. You could get really big bellows cameras that would be in Reaper Graphics Studios that would use those for enlargement purposes. They'd have the original on the far wall and that kind of stuff. Anything over 8x10 used to get called ultra large format. So anything over 4x5 would be large format. 6.45 is in centimetres, it's not in inches. So 4x5 was inches. 6.45 was in centimetres, 6 centimetres by 4.5. And you also had 6 centimetres by 6 centimetres square. 6.45 was good because it was cheaper to make and it came on a roll and it gave you a smaller negative, which was a lot easier to handle in your own darkroom if you did all your own developing and that kind of stuff. But I never did it. I did 35mm. I used to take mine to Colin Alford Labs and they used to process it for me. I used to chuck the bill on because I hated it. I was crap in a darkroom. Barely useless would be an exaggeration, I would say. But that's the difference. It's just that formats are just effectively the sizes of the film, and the bigger the format you go, the less likely you are to get it on a roll. of any description. Whether you can even still buy stuff. I know Alex still buys 8x10 directly from the States, but it's pretty hard. You could make your own. You could make your own film. Know a fella who made a camera body that took 6-inch plate film. Yeah, I mean, you can make your own film. It's only silver nitrate and celluloid. If you can get the celluloid and the silver nitrate and you can have the know-how, you can make yourself. I'm making it sound dead easy there. I couldn't develop the damn stuff particularly well, let alone sod him make the film. So don't take that as gospel. But that's the difference, Mark. That's all it is. 6-4-5 was the popular medium format because it gave you a negative, which was easier, and you got it on a roll, and it was cheaper. We got an update from Gordon. He's the guy that came and took the portrait picture of his grandparents the other week that I enhanced a little bit. And he was talking about buying a bigger lens as well and wanted to go to the 24-105, which I've got and I think is great, absolutely beautiful. This was making the camera body. No, I got that Windrider, yeah. But you can make your film as well as if you want. Watto Ewan, just thought I'd drop you a line as you seem lonely on the photo show at the moment. I took on board your thoughts the other week, as you know, and came close to buying the 24-105 lens, but chickened out because the only way I could get one was from Hong Kong for £600 or secondhand on eBay. Secondhand on eBay would have been a good buy, mate. I wouldn't sniff at that. In the end, I bought the 18-135, but the STM version for £300 from a shop in Cardiff. I did see a couple of reviews on YouTube for the same look, and for my level of photography at the moment, I thought it made more sense. I have to say, it's absolutely excellent. If you recall, part of my issue was the whirring noise and the fact that the kit lens seemed to go back and forth when trying to lock onto something. This lens is totally silent, and I mean totally silent. It definitely gets focused quicker and then stays there. The tracking feature on the 650D is now a usable feature for me, which could realistically be used with a full auto camcorder or as a full auto camcorder if you really wanted to. All I've got to do is just hand it to my wife. If anyone else has a modest budget and wants a DSLR to be a competent camcorder as well, I can definitely recommend the STM lens and the 650D combination. Thank you for the advice of the week. Much appreciated. There is also a great website for comparing lenses, and I'll put that in the show notes. You and that HDR app has an unlimited trial that adds a watermark, but that's all that limits it. Great. I'll give that a go then. Excellent, excellent. HDR Projects was the place. Third question. Charles Woodford in Kent. Circular Polarizer in Landscape Photography was the title. Hello, Ewan. I've started to do more with my photography, partly inspired by listening to the podcast. Thanks, mate. And partly because I finally retired last month and I'm determined to learn something properly. Well done, mate. Enjoy the retirement. I've started with something which I think will be cheap and simple in the form of landscape photography. My question is that I've got a basic 18-55mm kit lens with my Nikon D, he's put a number there, but I'm not going to read that out because I don't think that's the correct one. And wondered if I should purchase a UV filter or a circular polarizer. Are they useful in landscape photography or am I wasting my money? Right, first things first, UV filters. If you're talking about an 18-55 lens, it's disposable. So I wouldn't really worry too much about it. If it's not disposable to you because your pension wasn't as big as you thought, Charles, then I would get a UV filter for it, because if you put a scratch on it, the whole lens is gone. Whereas if you scratch a UV filter at an 18-55, it's probably going to be 52, 55mm, 60mm thread at worst. A 55mm UV will cost you £15, no more. So definitely worth getting to protect your lens if you can't afford to replace it. The 50mm lenses that I use, the 1.8, I have got two of those kicking around. And I never put the UV on it because it's another layer of glass. And I don't care if I break it because I'm getting paid enough that day to replace it. If I broke one a day, it wouldn't matter that much to me. I would, but that's not, that sounds flash. But you know, if I went through those one a quarter, and I never have, then that would be okay. I wouldn't mind. All get you, says Ian. Thanks, mate. Yeah, that's what I meant. Circular polarizer is going to cost you an awful lot more. You'll probably be paying in the £40 mark if you're over 52-55mm as your thread. Is it worth it for landscape? It will be if you're shooting across water. It'll definitely help with glare and reflection off the water and bring out more detail. One of the things that you find with landscapes, particularly first thing in the morning, is you'll get a lot of mist hanging in the air and things like that. Circular polarizer may just help tune the rays of the sun there so that it doesn't illuminate as much mist. But the beauty that you've got with the circular polarizer is it'll spin freely. So you're rotating it to find out when you're going to get the filter to align correctly with the direction of the sun to get rid of the maximum amount of glare that you've got. So as you turn it round, you'll start to see the depth of the mist change with it. You'll get a real-time view through your viewfinder. It should be good. I would definitely get one. I think a circular polarizer is well worth it for landscape photography. Big problem you got with air is the fact, particularly in the morning and late at night, it gets dewy and it gets misty and it hangs in the air, and that will give you problems. You can adjust it in levels afterwards. Levels will get rid of loads of mist as well. And the other thing is, if you get an image where you've got lots and lots of mist, if you open it up in a basic photo editor, so something like GIMP will do this, open levels, and all you've got to do is think about changing the blacks, bring more blacks into the image, and then tone down the mid-tones, bring them back so they're slightly darker, and you'll find that'll get rid of that mist and haze, and it'll be beautiful. And that's like GIMP, free stuff will do that. You don't need to buy Photoshop or anything like that, but if you buy Elements, dead easy with the sliders, no worries at all. There you go. Those are our three questions. Any last comments from the chat room before we finish? No. There we go. This podcast and all this is brought to you by UK2.net. Got an absolutely fabulous email today from a lovely guy who said that he'd bought his service from UK2. He said, just wanted to say how much I enjoy the shows. I found out by listening to you and on an episode of Maccast last year and downloaded the Big Show, Mac Show, Irish Show, etc. Fantastic mix of serious chat and banter, and I'll leave a review on iTunes. I just wanted to say I'm pleased I was with your sponsor and your offer codes. I bought my first ever domain last week and got 20% off, and also added DNS free for a whole year. Fantastic deals. A big thank you to UK2 for making the whole process easy, especially for a novice such as myself. Please keep up the good work, both of you. Regards, Mark. There you go. Thank you for sending that in, Mark. It's very kind. I'll read it out on the Mac show as well as. But if you want anything from UK2, just go to our website, britishtechnetwork.com, and then go on the sponsors page, click on the UK2 badge and go through. And then all you've got to do is come back and use the offer codes. Dead easy. You can wipe your basket completely clean if you need to. Every service that they've got, we offer an offer code for it. Go and say UK2 and buy all your stuff from them, because they're brill. Thanks, guys. Much appreciated. We'll be back again with the Mac Show at 3:30, so that's another hour away-ish. I'll be back again with the photo show next week. We're all here next week, normal shows, as is. The following week, we're all away. Everybody's going to be gone. There won't be any shows for a whole week, so do brace yourself. It will be empty for the Mac Show, the Big Show, and the photo show, but then we'll all start back up the following week. If you've got any questions, get them into us. We'll answer your photo questions, anything you like. Ask me any question you want. I'll do my very best to answer it. And if I don't know, I'll point you in the direction of someone who does. Send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and I'll answer. There you go. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me on @EwanRankin on Twitter and app.net. And see you next week.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.